Good morning. Today's Daf and Ksuvos is Beis. We're beginning the new Masechta. Here we are in the second Masechta of Seder Nashim. There are seven Masechtas in total, so this will represent now a good portion of the Gemaras that we're going to be covering Seder Nashim. And Ksuvos is about the marriage contract. And so it is a exceptionally large Masechta. In terms of Dapim, I believe it's the largest Masechta that we have here in Seder Nashim. Yevamos is larger in chapters, as we've discussed numerous times, but over here, 13 chapters regarding contract law and regarding the ksuva that is going to establish a marriage and fortify a marriage between husband and wife. So that's going to be our Masechta. Let's go over some very basic information that we all know, but it is important that we review, especially here at the beginning of the Masechta. So first of all, marriage. Let's talk about the institution of marriage. So marriage comes in a two-step process that we've discussed time and again. The first step of marriage is what's called kiddushin. A way to describe kiddushin is that it's a kinyan. It's an acquisition. Now, of course, that sounds like we're objectifying the woman, but in other words, that's obviously not the case. But it operates in the same manner that a kinyan operates. And so that a man is going to be kone a woman, a man will acquire the woman, and he'll do so in one of three ways. When we get to the Gemara in kiddushin, which oddly enough here in Seder Nashim is the last Masechta in Seder Nashim, so we're going to be learning about the methodology and the process in which you enter into a marriage, as you go through the first stage of marriage of what's called kiddushin. The man's mekadesh a woman in one of three ways, kesef, shtar, and bia. We will be discussing, when we go to the kiddushin, all those details. That's the first stage of marriage. I've said this already numerous times, but it's worthwhile repeating, and let's be as clear as possible. When we talk about kiddushin, kiddushin is marriage. It's not engagement. Okay, perhaps an English word that could be used to describe kiddushin is a betrothal. It's probably not going to be a fair way to describe it. Kiddushin is, in fact, marriage. In other words, husband and wife, we have still good seats available. Husband and wife, they are married to one another to the extent in which, after kiddushin, she goes and she's with another man. So that is adultery. That's eishes ish, and she's subject to capital punishment. So it's marriage. It's absolutely marriage. In almost every sense of the world. So then what's the second stage of marriage? Second stage of marriage is called Nisuin. Just back up for one moment. Kiddushin also goes by another name. It's called Erusin. So just so that when we hear it, we know we're appreciative of the languages that are used. Sometimes Kiddushin, sometimes Erusin. Anyway, those are synonymous terms. Then we move on to the second stage of marriage. Second stage of marriage is what's called Nisuin. Nisuin, the second stage of marriage, where the husband and wife now are going to be even further married. What in the world does that mean, they're further married? How much more married can you be? So, as we've discussed already numerous times, but here, now is the time that we get to speak it out in more detail, at the point of kiddushin, so they are married, they're husband and wife. However, they do not live together. It's a little bit strange, admittedly. We don't practice this nowadays. What we do nowadays, I'll explain in just a moment. But after kiddushin, even though, despite the fact that they are husband and wife, they are not living together. Furthermore, he has no financial obligations or responsibilities towards her. They are married, but living separately from one another. Sounds strange, but that's the first stage of marriage. In fact, the Rambam writes this clearly. We're going to see this in our Gemara as well. Over the course of our Gemaras, they are not allowed to have relations with one another. In other words, by virtue of the fact that they are not yet at the second stage of marriage, so it would be usher, and presumably the easiest way to say it, the Rambam writes like this, is that it's an isser de Rabbanan, they're not allowed to be with one another. And it's only at the point of Nisuin, at the second stage of marriage, so then they live with one another, they're intimate with one another, and on top of that, he has financial obligations towards her. All the financial responsibilities that a husband has to his wife is going to kick in at Nisuin. In the time of the Gemara, the time delay between Kiddushin and Nisuin was typically 1 year. A little bit strange, a little bit odd. Again, odd from our perspective, simply because we don't practice this. But in other words, a man would be Mekadesh a woman, and now they're husband and wife, and then for a year, he'd be living with his parents, she'd be living with her parents, and what would they be doing during that year? So they're getting ready to settle in together, and so and then a year later they'll have nisuin. They'll have whatever party they had back in the day. But in other words, they had the nisuin, and now they live together, husband and wife, and he now has the financial obligations towards her. So back in the good old days, it was separated by a full year. Why don't we know about this difference between Kedushin and Sona? I say we. I mean, those people who do not have an education, have a yeshiva background, how come we don't know about it? Because what happens is that our chasnas, so the two are put together in the same ceremony. You go to a Jewish wedding, and what happens at a Jewish wedding? So for the unlearned, they get married. Okay, now, for us who are learning about Kedushin, Nisuin. So what happens? So what happens is that first he does Kedushin to her. He puts the ring on her finger. Hariat Nukadesh asleep. Tabazu Kedash Moshe of Yisrael. So he does Kedushin. Then what happens is that we do a little bit of an intermission. It's a 2-minute intermission. Okay, and what happens is that rabbi's called up to read the ksuva. Okay, do you know what's happening at that point in time? He's reading a marriage contract. If everyone understood what he was saying, he's reading in Aramaic. So it's basically, it's contract law. I'm now going over all the obligations that a husband has to his wife. It's standard. It's terribly unromantic. It just outlines the financial obligations. Okay, and then what happens is now you have the Sheva Brachas, they're under the Chuppah together, and now we are going into the second stage of marriage. So we've taken what was once upon a time a year break between Kedushin and Nisuin, and we have now truncated it to about a 2-minute break. Okay, when did that happen? Why did that happen? So I'm still not sure. As many times as we've gone over this, I don't know when this shift has occurred in which a year break has gone into a 2-minute break.
Isn't it because they were too
young? I could guess. I don't know. I would only be guessing, and I simply don't know. But it happened. It's happened now for this. Obviously, this has been the practice for a long time. And I don't know when we went from the time of the Gemara to our times now. When did that change be made? It's just simply, I haven't learned enough. But whatever the case is, that's the practice nowadays, is that we take the two and put them together. Okay, that's all. Just brief introduction. Point number one, the two stages of marriage, we're all familiar. Our Masechta is going to be going over stage number two, and that is the Nisuin stage. Okay, in which... So they will be contractually obligated. That contractual obligation is called a ksuva. Hence our masechta. We're learning ksuvas over here. The ksuva is a contractual obligation between husband and wife. Okay, it is written up. It is, for the most part, standardized. But basically, it is a contractual obligation. It is his financials, monetary obligations that he has towards her. Now, in addition to that, there are other obligations that he has to her that are not monetary, but primarily, principally, it is monetary obligations that he has towards her. Now, I'm not going to, at this point in time, break down all the monetary obligations that he has to her. I don't need to. The Gemara is going to do that. Over the course of this Masechta, about halfway through the Masechta, somewhere in the Nuns, we're going to go over specifically what are those financial obligations that he has to her. So I don't need to speak it out right now. Okay, now, what we're going to be discussing in our first daf here in Ksuvos is a minhag that also once upon a time. Once upon a time, there was a minhag that the chasnas, when I say chasna now, from this point going forward, I'm talking about the nisuin, the second stage of marriage, because that's our masechta. So the chasnas back in the day used to be on Wednesday. Okay, what's so special about Wednesday? Okay, it's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. So this is going to not sound particularly romantic. I totally understand, but you know what's so special about Wednesday? It's the day before Thursday. Now what's so exciting about Thursday? So Basin gets together on Thursday. And so now what's going to happen is that on Wednesday, he marries her. Wednesday night, he will consummate the marriage. And if there's any kind of misunderstanding, disagreement, or simply he was lied to, regarding her status of being a basula. So what he can do now the next morning is that he can go to the Beis Din while he's good and heated. Why does he want to go to the Beis Din the very next day? Let me structure the question a little bit differently, a little bit better. Why would the Chachamim orchestrate it so that the chasas would be done on Wednesday, so that if there's an issue, he'll go to the Beis Din the very next day? So hold that thought, because that's one of our first discussions that we're going to be having over the course of today's daf. We're going to get to it momentarily. And hopefully you're also wondering, if the whole point of getting married on Wednesday is so that we're ready to go to Beis Din the next day, and again, I recognize the fact that this is unbelievably unromantic, but if that's the reason why chasas are set up for Wednesday, so then I got a great idea. Make the chasas on Sunday as well. In other words, you got Beis Din operating on Monday as well. Monday and Thursday are Beis Din days. So why not have the chasnas on Sunday? The Gemara is going to ask that question. We're going to answer that question together. Okay, all that is by way of a lengthy introduction, but good. We're starting a new Masechta. Now's the time to introduce. Let's begin. So the Besula will get married on Wednesday. The Almana, the widow, will get married on Thursday. Okay, again, so many things that we're going to amplify and clarify over the course of this first parak. So right now we just dropped two big pieces of information, and the Mishnah continues. Shepamim b'Shabbos, Shepamayim b'Shabbos, Bati Dinim Yoshem Ba'Yaros, B'Yamashen V'Yamachemishi Shimayu Lotanis Besulim Hayamashkin LaBeisdin. So the Mishnah goes on to describe how Beisdin will get together, convene on Mondays and Thursdays, and if there was Tainus Besulim, if the husband has felt that his wife was not a Besula, so now he can go into court the next day, and he could lay out his claim in the courtroom. Okay, now, let's ask the obvious question. And let's say she wasn't a Besula. Now, so what? So let's think this through, let's speak this out. This is a really important point, and this is going to be a lot of our discussion over the course of our first parak. She wasn't a Besula, right? In other words, when they were dating, and she told him, her parents told his parents, yeah, our daughter is a Besula. And then, lo and behold, what happens is that after the first night of marriage, she wasn't a Besula. Now, presumably, he's saying this because there was no blood. Obviously, Besulim is going to be represented by her Dam Besulim, her hymenal sac, which is typically going to be ruptured by the first act of relations that they have with one another. And what his claim is, it's a physical claim. He's saying that there was no Dam Besulim. That could be one way in which he's making such a claim. Later in this parak, what we're going to be discussing together is that the claim could be founded on other things as well. Stay tuned. That's coming up in about a week and a half from now in terms of other ways in which he can make this claim. Okay. And let's even go so far as to say that he's right. Meaning, let's say she claimed that she was a Besula and she wasn't a Besula. So, what is now, why are we so excited? Why are we orchestrating an entire wedding so that in the event that he's making this claim, and even if he's right, so they're going to be able to move to Basin the very next day. Let's ask the question a little bit differently. If in fact he's right, and let's say she's not a Besula. Okay, so what does that mean? In other words, is she prohibited to him? Is the whole marriage now going to be off because she's no longer Besula? Okay, so.
The ksuva has to be changed.
Okay, fine. So the ksuva has to be changed. Okay. And so fine. And you'll, I'm not going to say anything that's really highly controversial that doesn't seem like such a big deal. In other words, huh? Okay, good. Okay, so now what really is now on the table, what's on the forefront over here is the following. The big ramifications that could occur is that if, in fact, she was not a Besula, let's say he's right, that she wasn't a Besula, so now, aside from, right, in other words, Mekach Tos is certainly a consideration, but right now the larger consideration that we're having is that who was she with and when was she with that person? So, meaning, who was she with? Another man. But when was she with that person? So that obviously now is going to play a major role in terms of, aside from their marriage, just her status as being an adulteress. In other words, under the circumstances in which she was another man during that year of Kedushin, that's an act of adultery. So in other words, what happens over here is that if, in fact, he discovers that she wasn't a Besula, they go to Basin the next day, so then we're going to open up an investigation. Rashi writes over here. Look at Rashi. It's really important. V'shein v'chamishi. Rashi writes, Achas me'eser takana shetikin Ezra be'baba kama be'perek meruba. Okay, the fact that the courts get together on Monday and Thursday, that is one of the 10 takanas of Ezra. The Gemara in the 7th perek of Baba Kama goes over the 10 takanas of Ezra, this being one of them. So that if in the event he's claiming she's not a Besula, he's going to go to Beis Din and before he gets assuaged. And that's why we'll go from Wednesday to Thursday. Marriage on Wednesday. Thursday he's good and heated and good. And we want him to go to Beis Din. And the concern, of course, is that if there's a delay between his discovery, and when Beis Din convenes, maybe it'll calm down at that point in time. V'kayemena, and he'll keep her as a wife. And the problem is, and now this is important, because now we're not just talking about monetary considerations. We're now going to be talking about iser considerations. V'shema hi zinsa tachtav v'nasr alav kiddi alfinan. And the problem now is that if in fact she committed adultery while during the kedushin, during that year of kedushin, so that's considered eishes ish, that's adultery. As a result of that, she'll be prohibited to him. Okay. Now, the truth of the matter is that we enter into a really detailed discussion right now at the beginning of the Masechta. That, quite frankly, I would love if we could have just pushed it off to a little bit later to have such heavy lifting at the beginning of the Masechta. But let's go over what the Gemara is going to be discussing a little bit later on. In other words, what are the chances that she committed znus? So in Halacha, let's take a look at our possibilities. One possibility is the following, is that she was Mizana, that she committed adultery. Let's say it a little bit differently. Let's say that she had willful relations with another man. Okay, let's say that's even true. When did it occur? We don't know. Meaning, all he's saying factually is that she's not a basula, and she had relations with another man. Let's say it was willful. When did it happen? There are two possibilities. Either it happened during that year of Kedushin, or maybe it happened beforehand. Now, if it happened beforehand, so yes, there are issues now of Mekachtos. But right now, just focusing on the Isser, if she had relations with another man prior to the Kedushin, is she prohibited to her husband? No. So there are two possibilities. So that's what's called in Halacha Safek. Additional to that, let's say that she did have relations during that year of Kedushin, but it wasn't willful. Let's say she was violated. Is she going to be prohibited to her husband? If he was a Kohen, yes, but otherwise, no. So there's a second Safek as well. So what we have in Halacha over here is what's called the Sfeik Sfeika, the double doubt. Generally speaking, when we talk about Isser, and there's a Sfeik Sfeika, meaning by a single suffix, so we're going to be Machmer, especially by an Isser Daraisa. But if it's a Sfeik Sfeika, if it's a double doubt, we're not going to be Machmer. And so, let's ask the question. If all we're worried about over here is a Sfeik Sfeika, because we don't know when she had relations, whether it was before or after Kedushin, we also don't know whether it was Be'ones of Ratzon. So under those circumstances, now we're dealing with a double doubt, a Sfeik Sfeika. She's not going to be prohibited to her husband. So even as we are taking his claim seriously, even if he's right that she's not a Basula, and so what? Meaning at this point in time, she's not going to be prohibited to her husband. It's a Sfeik Sfeika. Okay, so Tosfos points out over here, Tosfos says, you go back to Rashi. Rashi really answered this question. Rashi says that what this does is it opens an investigation, meaning you're right. Even if at this point in time it's established that she's not a Basula, she doesn't become prohibited to him. But in opening up an investigation, maybe more information is going to come in. In the absence of more information, so then go back to what I just said. She is not usher to him. It's a Sfeik Sfeika. Yes, they're going to have to resolve the monetary issues over here that they're going to have with one another. And yes, there was misgivings regarding the fact that she said she was a basula and turned out not to be one. But in terms of Isser, if all we know is that she was not a basula, she's not prohibited to him because it's Sfeik Sfeika. However, what it does is that it will open up the investigation where Beis Din is going to see if they can get any more information at this point in time. Okay. We start with the Gemara, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mimnei Ma'am, Rav Basul, Nisus, Amar Ravi. So, women getting married on Wednesday. What's that all about? So, Lefisha Shaninu, Higiyazman, Velo Nisa, Ochlos, Mishlo, Ochlos, Mishuma. Yachol, Higiyazman, Be'echa, B'Shabbos, Yeh, Malala, Mizonos, Lekach, Shanina, Basul, Nisus, Amar Ravi. So again, going back to my intro, we said that all the financial obligations and responsibilities kick in at the point of Nisuin. And again, back in the day, the minhag was 1 year later. So in other words, at the point of the Kedushin, mark the calendar. When was the Kedushin? What's today? I should know today's date. Tammuz, what day of Tammuz is today? Whatever. Tenth. Today's the 10th day of Tammuz. So if the Kedushin was today on the 10th day of Tammuz, so next year now, on the 10th day of Tammuz next year, so new, we're going to go into Nisuin, and at that point in time, I'm financially obligated. Now, and oh, by the way, if I'm a Kohen, you're going to be eating Truma on the 10th day of Tammuz next year. because all the financial obligations kick in. Now, let's say next year, a year from today, 10th day of Tammuz, let's say it falls down on a Sunday. Oh. She says, new, let's go. Financial obligations, let's start. And you say to her, well, wait 1 second. Today's Sunday, right? We don't get married on Sunday. We get married on Wednesday. As per Takana de Rabbanan, we're going to get married on Wednesday. So now you have a legitimate claim, meaning you don't have to start all the financial obligations today as we are instructed to listen to the Chachamim. Chachamim told us to get married on Wednesday. So what the mission now is doing, well, I'm sorry, what the Gemara now is doing is that it's explaining the halacha that if the year to date later comes out on a Sunday, or it doesn't have to be Sunday, by the way, any other day other than Wednesday, so we can now, the husband can legitimately push off his financial obligations to Wednesday. So I'm Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, wait 1 second. Mari da Avraham, my God, right? It's an expression. Right, literally the master of Avram, my God. So Tali Tanya B'dalo Tanya. So the Gemara says, what you're doing is that you're explaining a brisa with a non-brisa. So the Gemara says, first of all, clarification. Hi Tanya V'ai, the Hi Tanya V'ai Lo Tanya, Hi Tanya V'ai Tanya. They're both brisas, actually. They're both Mishnayos, either way. So Ella Tali Tanya de Mefarish Taima B'ditanya de Lo Mefarish Taima. So but what Rav Yosef is objecting to is that our Mishnah, it gives an explanation. The Mishnah upcoming regarding pushing off financial obligations does not give an explanation. You're using that Mishnah to explain our Mishnah? That's strange. So Alayid Ma Hachid Ma. So the Gemara says fine. So I'm Rav Yudah Mashmol Min Mei Ma Am Rav Besulim Nesus Yom Rav Yishim Ayelot Tanis Besulim Hayamashin Labeisin Vitinase Beecha Beshabeshim Ayelot Tanis Besulim Hayamashin Labeisin. Okay, so. As we have already said numerous times, but now we're just amplifying, we're just broadcasting our Mishnah. Our Mishnah tells us that you get married on Wednesday, so if in the event that you need to go to litigation, you're going to be readily available the very next morning. Now, Shaktu Chachamim Tekanos Benos Yisrael Shiei Torech B'Seuda, I'm sorry, did I just skip a little bit? Okay, we're back. So good, so now let's get married on Sunday. Meaning now the Gemara is asking the question, if the whole purpose of rabbinic institution to get married on Wednesday is to be prepared for the Beis Din on Thursday, so how about getting married on Sunday? So, she'im ha'yalot times b'sum, ha'yam ha'shkala Beis Din. Okay, so simple question now. So why isn't Sunday now a viable day to get married? So shaktu chacham, ha'matachanos b'nei Yisrael, she'ei torech b'suda, shlosha yamim, echa b'shabbos, v'shein b'shabbos, v'shish b'shabbos, or v'yakon sa. So the Gemara says, because we want this nisuin to be a respectable, let's call it a party. Okay? In other words, it's a chasna. And the chachamim instituted that there should be 3 days of preparation. I know it's a funny institution, meaning it's kind of intuitive that you're making a chasna, you need to put it together. But, okay. But still, the Chachamim wanted to make sure that it was bechavod, it was done respectfully and properly and appropriate to the woman, and therefore they legislated that there be 3 days of preparation. So therefore, when your weddings were on Wednesday, so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday are going to be your prep days, Wednesday is going to be the chasna, and if necessary, you go to Beis Din on Thursday. Okay, that's some week. Okay, so the, but if the wedding was on Sunday, well, obviously Shabbos is going to significantly impede your ability to prepare for the wedding. And that's why the wedding simply can't occur on Sunday. You have the Beis Din after Sunday, but you don't have the 3 days of prep prior to Sunday. Okay. So ve'achsha shashani shaktu ata shaktu osu shashani nu igizman lo nisu ochlos mishlo v'ochlos b'truma. So the Gemara says, now we know about this concept of shaktu. Now we know. Meaning now we understand why it is that women don't get married on Sunday. Good. Now I go back to the scenario that we just painted moments earlier, where we got the Kedushin was done on the 10th day of Tammuz. Next year, a year from now, year to date. So the on the 10th day of Tammuz. So she's saying, new, let's start the financial obligations. And you say to her, I'd love to, but we need the chasna. And today happens to be Sunday. Again, not just Sunday. Any day other than Wednesday. So now you, now because of the Takana Derabanan of Shaktu, can now say Sunday's off the table. We can't get married on Sunday because of rabbinic legislation. Therefore, we can only first get married on the upcoming Wednesday. That's why my financial obligations have to kick in at that point in time. He Gia, just give me one second. Oh, no, you're, yeah, this is a good point to pause. Danny, go. Ah, so the financial obligations was just when the expectation was that Nisuin should occur. So it's a time. It's a time consideration, right? In other words, when the financial obligations kick, so generally speaking, concurrently, they're also intimate with one another. In other words, we're entering into the second stage of marriage, where they move in together and the financial obligations kick in, and they're intimate with one another, meaning it's a package deal. Typically, the expectation was is that it was done a year later. So that's why 1 year later, year to date, she now turns back to him and says, good, so I'm ready to get married, therefore the financial obligation should kick in. And right now, what is an excusable delay for him, meaning he can push off the financial obligations because of rabbinic legislation. Because the rabbis told us we have to wait. Good. Now, he gives man becha b'shabbos mitoch she'enu yachol lechnos en amal ala mezonos lefichach. Okay, so now we know what is excusable. So rabbinic legislation provides for him a good excuse why it is that we're going to have to wait just a little bit of time before I pay you all these financial obligations. Lefichach. Therefore, chalahu osha chalta hi osha pirsanida. Let's say he gets sick. Let's say she gets sick. Let's say pirsanida. Let's say she's anida. So eno mala la mizonos. So seemingly these are also going to be legitimate excuses in terms of his ability to push off his financial obligations. They're scheduled to get married on the right day, on Wednesday. And then what happens is, okay, right, he tested positive for COVID. We gotta push off the wedding. I'm sure you understand. And what the Gemara now is advancing and arguing is that because he's sick, or alternatively she's sick, alternatively she's anida, and we're gonna be pushing off the wedding. So as a result of that, now he can push off his financial obligations. Sounds reasonable. So the Gemara says, okay, right now we are at the point where we know rabbinic legislation is going to be a good excuse for him. We are right now asserting that even illness is going to be a good excuse as well. Some have this discussion, but are not so confident that the conclusion is sound. Chalahu, mahu. What if he gets sick? Now, so in the case where we pushed off the wedding because of Takana Derabanan, so we'll call that an ones. If he gets sick, we'll also call that an ones. He didn't want to get sick. No, but you know, he was certainly not interested in being bedridden for a couple of days. So that's also an ones as well. Therefore, allows him to push off his financial obligation. However, you can make a really simple distinction. There's onus and then there's onus. Onus because the Chachamim told us that we need to wait till Wednesday. Okay, that's a significant onus, meaning that is totally out of my control. However, when it comes to illness, maybe not, right? Now, not really sure how to say over this distinction. Maybe you could have taken better care of yourself, you should have been taking better care of yourself, or just simply maybe, look, right. Tough luck, meaning if the rabbis told us to wait, that's not tough luck. Meaning that's our imperative to listen to the rabbis. But if I got sick, all right, maybe that's just bad mazel, if you will. So the intim salamer chaluhu mala lamizonos. Now let's say like this. Let's say if he gets sick, so we're going to say to him, look, tough luck. Okay, so right. In other words, the wedding was supposed to occur today. All right, you came down with a cold. Okay. Your financial obligations begin right now. You're sick? That's unfortunate. Now, chaltehi mahu. So even if we're going to say that, right? In other words, the Gemara is swinging side to side between what is excusable, what's unexcusable. But right now we're presuming that his illness is not excusable. Let's now say she got sick. Now, I know moments earlier in the Gemara we said that is now going to be considered a legitimate pass for him, is that he doesn't have to start paying his financial obligations. But right now, we are in another we're in another thinking of the Gemara. In this iteration of the Gemara, we're now considering, what if she gets sick? Is that going to be excusable? So Mahu Matzi Amrla Anahu Kaimna. Can he say to her, look, I'm ready, meaning I'm prepared to get married. You're calling in sick? Okay. I hope you feel better, but I'm not paying you your financial obligations until the wedding actually occurs. O Dilma Matzi Amrla Nistab Chasadeo. Or maybe she could say to him that your field is flooded. It's an expression of the Gemara that just simply means it's tough luck. In other words, look, right? It's unfortunate, but I got sick. The nesuim was delayed, but you needed to start paying the financial obligations as of today. Okay, start paying. Imtim salamar amar lein estab chasadeu. So maybe she could say to him, "It's your tough luck." So pierce anida emahu. Let's say she becomes anida. Now, Bishas Vesta Loti Bailach. Now, if it was scheduled and she knew that she was going to be needed at that point in time, so then Delomati Amra Lein Istab Chasadeu, where she can't simply say to him tough luck because it was something that was anticipated. So Kiti Bailach Shalom Bishas Vesta. But what if, let's say, she was off schedule, meaning that they were supposed to get married, she wasn't scheduled to have her nida at that point in time, but okay, it came off schedule. So my Kevin de Lobashas Vesta Himatya Amra Lane Istab Chasadeu. So despite the fact that it was unscheduled, can she just simply say to him, look, sorry, but it's as far as mazel, it's just your bad mazel. But you're gonna have to start paying your financial obligations now. O Dilma Kevin Dika Nishe Dika Mishanya Vestayu Kishas Vesta Dami. On the other hand, women do go off course, meaning they don't always have a fixed schedule. And therefore, we could consider like Shas Vesta, and it's something which the woman should have anticipated, and therefore it would be a good excuse for him to delay in paying all of his financial obligations. Okay, so in the second iteration of the Gemara now is just asking questions in terms of what is an excusable pass for him to delay in the beginning of his financial obligations. If he gets sick, if she gets sick, if she's anida, at a scheduled opportunity, at an unscheduled opportunity, so Pasha Rav Achai, he gives man velo nisu ochos mishlo ochos bitruma. So Rav Achai says, okay, let's go back to the mission that we learned earlier this morning. Let's read it carefully. It says, lo nisu. Now, lo nisu is coming from whose perspective? So lo nisu is coming from the husband's perspective. So lo nasu lo katanu ela lo nisu. So hechidami idika akvan inhi. So if she's the one holding it back, amai ochlos mishlov ochlos betruma. So then why does he have to pay? Ela lav di isnes ki haigavna. It must be that the onus of any of the above examples that we gave, vikatani ochlos mishlov ochlos betruma. And yet the Mishnah says, "Ochlos mishlov ochlos b'truma," meaning all the financial obligations are going to kick in. Meaning, what Rav Achai is saying is that, look, from the perspective of the Mishnah, the Mishnah seems to indicate that, despite the fact that he didn't marry her, and regardless of what the reason is, nevertheless, all the obligations are going to kick in. So Rav Achai is of the position that there's really nothing excusable. I say nothing, not nothing, meaning we have to go back to the original point, which is that we're pushing it off because the Chachamim told us to do so. So that's legitimate, but anything outside of that is not excusable. And I'm Rav Ashi lo lameim lecha kolon tzolo achla. And Rav Ashi will take the other position. No, if there's an ones, so then he doesn't have to start with his financial obligations. Udika ma'akve inu v'dinhu di'i ba'ile lemisne lo nasu. I did the Tanarisha Bididhi Tananami Sefa Bididi. Since the Mishnah starts off from her perspective, meaning look back at our Mishnah. Besula Nises. The woman is getting married. Now that's a funny way to say it. The woman's getting married. Meaning they're marrying each other. So why is the Mishnah taking it from her perspective? Oh. So since it says Besula Nises, the Mishnah goes on to describe it from her perspective. And the next Mishnah also is describing it from her perspective. But Rav Ashi says that's just stylistic. Meaning, but in terms of if in fact there's an onus that delayed the marriage, regardless of what the onus was, he got sick, she got sick, she became a nida, regardless of what the onus is, so then that would be a legitimate pass for him to delay in the paying of his financial obligations. Okay, so where are we right now? In the Gemara. So we learned together so far that the marriage was instituted, legislated to occur on Wednesday, so that in the event they need to go to Beis Din, they'll do so the next day. We also learned that the financial obligations kick in on the day in which the expectation was they're going to get married. We also learned together that, as a result of that, if year-to-date from Kedushin comes out on Sunday, for example, so he can now legitimately say to her, look, right, we can't get married today because of Takana de Rabbanan. We're going to have to wait till Wednesday. Since our need to wait to Wednesday is because we're following Takana de Rabbanan, I therefore don't have to start paying until Wednesday. What the Gemara now has been discussing and debating is whether or not other excuses are in fact legitimate and allow him to delay in the starting of his financial obligations. His illness, her becoming a nida, or any of those excusable, comes out a machlokus amongst the Amoraim. Machlokus between Rav Achai and Rav Ashi. Amarava. A little bit more for today's daf. Uli'inyin gitan eino kein. Now, as far as the get is concerned, so this is not going to be the case. What's not going to be the case? Meaning that if there's an onus, so is an onus going to be excusable? No. Amakas of Rav Ein Onus Begin, Rav is of the position that onus is never going to be an excuse when it comes to a get. Now, what exactly does that mean? So as we go through the discussion, it will become clear. So mina le l'ravaha. How did Rav know that? If there's a get, and there's a condition attached to the get, and the condition was not met because of something that was totally beyond my control, how did Rava know that we just simply don't look at any excuse when it comes to the get? The get is issued, the get will be acceptable. So, Ilem Me'adad, now maybe it's from the following Mishnah, Rezikitechem lo bati mikan v'ad shnei masar chodesh, umeis betoch shnei masar chodesh, eino get. So, in the event where he says, this is going to be your get if I don't return after 12 months, and he dies within those 12 months, the get is not going to be a get. And the Gemara now wants to read this Mishnah critically. Meis hu deino get, hachala hareze get. Now, what it sounds like is that if he dies, the get's not going to be a good get, but if he gets ill and his inability to come back is because of illness, the get would still be a get. Ah, illness. Illness is onus. He didn't ask to become sick. That was something that was beyond his control. And yet the Mishnah would indicate that the get would be a valid get. This would seem to be a source that teaches us that onus is not going to be an excuse when it comes to a condition attached to a get. So the Gemara says, well, maybe not. Maybe you don't have to read the Mishnah critically. Maybe the Mishnah is just there to teach us the basic point that because the get is only going to be effectuated a year later, and he dies before that. So you know why the get doesn't work? Because a dead man cannot issue a get. It's that simple. And maybe that's the whole point of the Mishnah. So, ain't get la chamisa, tanale resha. The Gemara says, we already have a Mishnah that taught us that point. So, harizikitech imesi, harizikitech mecholiza, harizikitech la chamisa, lo arma klum. Any language that would suggest that the get is going to work after I die is simply not going to be effective. Because ain't get la chamisa. So it has already been articulated earlier in the Mishnah. That allows now us to read the second Mishnah and allow us to make diukim and read it critically. So the Gemara says, Dama lafukim ed rabba sena detanya. So the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe the purpose of the second Mishnah is to exclude from an opinion. Meaning, there is an opinion out there that even though you wrote the get and said the get will be effective if I don't come back a year from now, some are of the opinion that the get would be good. Why? That person can't give a get. Why would it be good? So there are those of the opinion that the effectiveness of the get is going to go back to the day in which it was written. The rabbis allowed her to remarry, meaning in this case where he writes again and says that the get will be effective a year from now, right? Assuming I don't come back. So, and he dies within that year. So again, the halacha is, the get's not going to be a good get. Why? Because the effectiveness of the get will occur after he died. In get la chamisa. That's the halacha. However, there is a school of thought that the get would be a good get. Why? Because it would go back retroactive to the time in which it was written. So it's the same basin that permitted, that allowed oil. When we get to Avodah Zarah, I'll explain that a lot better. Anyway, they subscribe to the sheet of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says that even though the get sounds like it will only be affected a year from now, but because the get was dated today, so therefore the effectiveness of the get will kick in today, not a year from now. This is the idea of Zmano Shoshtar Mochiach Alav, that the date on the document tells you when it's going to be effected. Okay, so this is the opinion of Rav Yossi, and so therefore the second Mishnah, even though it sounds redundant, ain't get lachamisa, I knew that already. No, the second Mishnah was to tell us that we do not subscribe to this viewpoint of Rav Yossi. The Elam is safer, so the Gemara says, okay, but I do have another Mishnah over there. So if I come, may achshav, the get should be affected from now. If I don't come back from 12 months from now, and he dies within those 12 months, so that would be a get. Now here, he uses the magic word, may achshav. In other words, uses it, or probably writes it in the document as well, meaning it states clearly that the get will be effective immediately, as long as, and then he throws in a Tanai. In this case, the Tanai is I don't come back within 12 months from now. Here, if he dies within those 12 months, the get would be a good get, because we're not looking for the get to be working after he died. He used the word me'achshav. So me'isvehu adin l'chola. Now, regardless of whether he died or whether he became ill, the get will be affected. So, meaning, the Mishnah didn't make a distinction of why he didn't come back. Now, death is definitely going to impede his ability to come back. It'll be challenging, right? I say that sarcastically. It'll be challenging for him to come back after he died. But presumably, the Mishnah is also saying that even if he got ill and he didn't come back, that also would activate the get. Ah, but illness is ones. Ah, so it sounds like over here that even though it's an ones, we simply ignore the fact that it was, quote-unquote, beyond his control. So So the Gemara says, I'm not convinced. Maybe that Mishnah is talking specifically where he died, and the reason why he wants to get to be activated is, as we discussed numerous times in Yevamos, maybe he knows that she does not want to become a Yevama. That's why he wants to get to be effective. But maybe if he got ill, and his reason for not returning within a year is because of his illness, maybe he didn't want to get affected. So again, the Mishnah doesn't mention the case of Chola, and for us to assume the same halacha would be true by Chola, the Gemara is arguing, it's not a fair assumption. Ela meha. So the Gemara says, okay, why don't we consider now the following. A man writes a get for his wife, and he says, look, if I don't come back within 30 days from now, the get will be effective. Okay, so again, a stipulation attached to a get. And the condition is really simple. All I have to do is not make it back here 30 days from now. And then, if I don't, the get will be activated. Now, on day 30, so what does he do? He books a flight. Okay, yeah, I know. I know, right. I'm teeing myself up for the airline industry. Okay, get ready, airline industry. So he books a flight on day 30. So the, and Upaske Mavra. Okay, I understand they're not talking about flights, they're talking about boats, but you know, everyone understands. It's basically the same. And what happened was is they canceled your flight. Okay. So, Amarlu Chazadasai Chazadasai. And so now, he calls her on the phone. I know I'm being a little bit anachronistic, but it's fine. And he calls her on the phone and he says, look, I'm interested in coming right now. My flight was canceled. I didn't expect it to come. Okay, unfortunately nowadays, expect it. Okay, they. So, Amar Shmuel Lashme Masya. So Shmuel says, you didn't come. In other words, the stipulation was you're going to come, and you didn't come. And so therefore, what do we see over there? Now, it's not a Mishnah, admittedly, meaning it would have been better if we could have sourced it back to a Mishnah, so it's not a Mishnah. But nevertheless, Shmuel says unequivocally that it's not an excuse. Meaning, the condition was he's supposed to come within 30 days. He didn't come within 30 days. He called to say that his flight was canceled. Shmuel says that's unfortunate. And so you see over here that ones will not impact a get. So the Gemara says, "V'dilma ones unsa d'shchiach shani." The kevin diyabai leisnuri v'lo esni iu dafsin anafshe. So the Gemara says, "Okay, but I don't hear that as being an ones. Ones is something that was beyond your control. In other words, the idea that the airline canceled the flight on you, it's something that you should have expected. The fact that the ferry is not going today, something you should have expected. Meaning these things happen and you know these things happen. So that's not really a fair comparison to our question. Our question are things that are totally beyond your control and ones. That's what we're asking. That's what we're trying to ascertain. At this point in time, we are still open-ended on this discussion. Meaning, ain't ones begitten. How do I know ain't ones begitten? We tried a Mishnah in Gittin. We tried another Mishnah in Gittin. We tried even a third Mishnah in Gittin. We have came unsuccessful on all those attempts. We had a Psak of Shmuel. We also are not sure whether or not we still don't have a good source of Ein Onus Begitin. So this discussion obviously continues into tomorrow's daf. Let's quickly recap. We introduced ourselves to the Masechta of Ksuvos. We gave a brief introduction this morning to the institution of marriage, how marriage works, the Ksuva, the obligation that a husband obligates his wife, all the financial obligations and other obligations as well that a husband has to his wife is going to be incorporated into the Ksuva. I didn't mention in the introduction, which now that I'm reviewing and thinking about it, a most basic point, which is that the Ksuva is a prenuptial agreement so that in the event of death or divorce, he's going to be owing her a lump sum of money. That is also integral to the Ksuva. That is one of the main factors, main facets of the Ksuva. Okay, Baruch Hashem, we're starting a Masechta. We're going to be discussing this numerous times, time and again. But, okay, whatever. I just failed to mention the introduction. Good. So I gave a brief introduction. We learned together in the Mishnah that the Nisu in the second stage of marriage is going to be occurring on a Wednesday. So that if necessary, they can go to Basin on Thursday. We discussed why the Chachamim are so bent on the idea they should be going to Basin on Thursday. We talked this morning about what kind of Isser there would be if, in fact, she was not a Besula. We talked about the concept of Sveik Sveika, and we talked about what it does is it opens investigation, meaning this information by itself is not going to Asser her onto him, but it will open up an investigation. On the Amud Aleph, what we discussed was the fact that since rabbinically it's now legislated that people get married on Wednesday, so if in the event that year-to-date from Kedushin falls out on any other day, including Sunday, so now he can legitimately push off the wedding and push off his financial obligations. And then, a big discussion in today's daf, what about other considerations? Are there anything else excusable, excusing him from having to start paying his financial obligations? His illness, her becoming a nida. Are all those going to be excuses? Debate in today's daf. That was the main part of today's daf. And finally, when it comes to a get, if a get is issued with a condition, and the condition was not met, but for reasons that were beyond his control, is that going to be excusable? So Rava says no, inexcusable. Meaning, when it comes to a get, and you attached a stipulation to the get, for whatever reason, if the condition was not met, the get is effectuated. The get will now serve as severance. She can now go and marry somebody else. Okay, do I have a source for that? Right now, no. Meaning we tried unsuccessfully to have a source for that. We'll come back to that at the beginning of tomorrow's daf. Another basic question. Well, why? In other words, onus rachmana patre. Normally, onus is serving as an excuse. Why by get does onus not serve as an excuse? That also we're going to be discussing tomorrow as well.